Accession number 13205, reel 2.
Mr. Webster, reel 2.
I looked over the side, and there were literally dozens of bodies. Some of them were bloated, and the smell, if I remember, was a shocking smell. They were various soldiers, French and British. Now that was our first insight of Dunkirk. On our first trip, the evacuation of the troops went steadily, and we returned to Dover brimming over with them, as the saying goes.
How were they embarked? Hundreds. How were they embarked?
On their first, they were embarked from the jetty straight on to the destroyer, which meant that the embarkation of those troops was fairly quick.
Was the destroyer level with the jetty?
Of course it was tidal, but if I remember rightly, there was no great fluctuation between high and low tides in Dunkirk. We brought them to Dover, disembarked them, and some of them were in a fair state, wounded, unshaven. Naturally enough, these chaps had about 3 weeks on the run, apart from the time they spent on the beaches. After disembarking the troops, we refueled, checked ammunition, and the next morning departed for Dunkirk, fully expecting, when we got there, the same old job, alongside the jetty, quick intake, back to Dover. On approaching Dunkirk, we were informed by signal that the jetty, due to bombing, was out of commission. We would then proceed to Le Pan Beaches to carry on with the evacuation. Owing to the shallowness of the very slightly shelving beach, we could not get close to the beach. So we had to use our whaler and small ship's motorboat. The whaler, with a coxswain and I believe two or three hands, went inshore to collect soldiers, and we never heard of the whaler again. What happened? I never found out. Whether the soldiers had, because they were anxious to get on board to be rescued, whether they flooded the whaler, I don't know. But we never saw it again. So then we relied then on our motorboat. And other small vessels that were to-ing and fro-ing from the shore to the Shikari. But it took much longer to load, as you can imagine. This routine we carried on for the next 7 days.
How many trips to Dunkirk do you think you made?
I would say in the region of 8. Now, I may be exaggerating, but I think that 8 would be a fair number. But when you consider that it was a 24-hour job, I would say the time we were over there 10 days and we were continuously on the go, I should imagine 8 trips would have been in the region.
Each time to La Panne beaches?
Each time to La Panne. We had several bombings there. There was a paddle steamer run up onto the beach. I can't give her name, but she served her use even when on the beach, as she had a couple of Lewis guns, and the Germans were spasmodically strafing and bombing the beaches. One morning we came under fire from a shore battery. They were picking their range. First, it was quite some way away, I'd say 1,000 yards plus, but they gradually crept in. An air skipper ordered that we send a signal in plain language saying that we were being heavily shelled off the Palm beaches. We gave the coordinates of the direction that the shells were coming from, and I sent a signal which I suppose was the ambition of every telegraphist. I sent a signal, emergency signals, which were O. They were being completely ignored, and I sent, under the skipper's direction, I sent O break U, which is utmost emergency, only to be used, you know, in real emergency or for state affairs. Strangely enough, within minutes of the signal being received, the shelling stopped. At no time during our evacuation duties at Dunkirk were we ever attacked by aircraft. I think mainly that the aircraft concentrated on the few merchant ships that were there and mainly on the beach.
Was the ship hit?
No, we had no hits. No hits on the ship. In fact, as I've stated, apart from the shelling, we never came under direct attack whilst off La Panne. Must have been some reason for it, but I think the reason is that the German pilots were concentrating on the beaches. We did open fire with our 4-inch low-angle gun on one occasion when a couple of twin-end bombers were flying over the beach. We are almost sure that our low-angle 4-inch gun was responsible for one of them crashing into the sand dunes behind Dunkirk. On its crashing, there was a great cheer went up from the beaches from the troops. All I can say is we didn't have a marvellous gun there, that if we did hit this plane, I think he must have been the most unluckiest pilot, German pilot, in the war, because it was against all the odds that low-angle guns could really do anything with an aircraft.
So the gun layer was rather incompetent, was it?
I wouldn't say incompetent. Lack of practice. Lack of real war practice. Which developed, no doubt, during the war. We had plenty of practice then, or the destroyers did. Oh no, there's no aspersions on the gun layer. We were we were still learning. The great British Navy was still learning about fighting a war at Dunkirk. We were just as green as the rest of the services. As I said before, we were facing the German forces, which were really trained. And it took a few years to catch up with them. But when we did, well, we all know the result, don't we? Anyhow, Dunkirk was coming to a stop. And the signal was sent that it would finish at, I think it was 3 a.m., I don't remember the date, of a particular day. We took air last, created a Pongoose on board, and proceeded out of Dunkirk, close to the shore, and at that time Dunkirk was a mass of smoke and heavy fire, which I've learnt since were air perimeter forces carrying out a check on Jerry to allow the lads in Dunkirk to be embarked. On this last trip we did have one peculiar situation. We were fired upon from the shore as we left the mainland, and I remember the signal saying, "Cheeky bees." It was two German tanks, air gun there, engaged, but I think on this occasion there were no hits either side. We arrived in Dunkirk. Disembarked our troops.
Arrived where?
Sorry, I'll repeat that. Not Dunkirk. We arrived at Dover. Disembarked our troops. And were looking forward to leaving for Guz, Devonport, the next morning. And we were all worn out and in a state of nerves. To say that I wasn't frightened over Dunkirk, I'd be telling a lie. We were frightened, but you still carried on and did your job. Obviously you've got to give us a chance. We were learners. The next morning we were all ready to depart for Devonport when we received a signal on board that the sailing was delayed. We were to wait further orders. Cutting a long story short, these orders were that we were to take two motor torpedo boats in tow, rendezvous with three merchant ships, we'll term them block ships, load of cement, escort them over to Dunkirk, and as I said, the evacuation was finished. Jerry was more or less, apart from small pockets of resistance, in charge. We arrived in the evening. It was getting, dusk was setting in, and we sent the three block ships ahead towards the entrance of Dunkirk Harbour. The scene in Dunkirk, well, it was chaotic. There were fires raging, and as I said before, smoke. It was like Hades. To complicate things, the first block ship that was set towards the entrance, where the plan was to sink them and block the entrance to Dunkirk, the first block ship hit a mine, and of course, being filled with concrete, she went down like a stone. Whether the survivors were picked up, I don't know. Each merchant ship had approximately 17 men on board. Lieutenant Commander Richardson then took charge, and the remaining two block ships were ushered in and sunk across the Dunkirk harbour. And as far as I know, Dunkirk was never used for heavy shipping for the remainder of the war. So it was a good job. We then returned to Dover and to our beloved Guzland. Looking back on Dunkirk now, it was a fearsome place. As I say, to raw, and we were raw young sailors. Probably the old campaigners of the 1418 war wouldn't have took it so bad, but I can tell you, I've never been a religious man, but I said quite a few prayers during our stay in Dunkirk. Helped the old ego, I think.
What happened to the Shikari after Dunkirk?
After Dunkirk, we still ran with the 16th DF, and we were employed on, I seem to remember the code name, JC4 patrols, which entailed carrying out sweeps in the channel, anti-U-boat patrols, and, comically enough, anti-E-boat patrols. And the old Rosemary and the Foxglove were also employed on that. But what chance we should have stood, Shikari, with their small arms and their really small speed against E-boats, I dread to think. But strangely enough, we never saw one. Now, the weather during this period in the winter after Dunkirk, it was shocking. Terrible weather. We were always glad to get in past the Nab Tower in Portsmouth and get in alongside. And I think even the most senior of the ratings on board couldn't really say he didn't use a sick bucket, because we all did. The weather was shocking.
Did you stay with the Shikari into 41, doing this kind of work?
No. I stayed with the Shikari until the 1st of March, 1940. Now, hang on. I have the dates wrong here. Cancel that, please. I stayed with the Shikari until the 25th of July, 1940. When I was drafted to HMS Drake, and from there to the Victory. Portsmouth, where I did a course, equipment course, transmitters and receivers for, as they told us, it was hush hush, but it was for a modern battleship that was being built, constructed. On the 20th of September 1940, I had a draft jet to a J3968 job number in Camelldare's Navy Yard, Birkenhead. And it was the Prince of Wales, nearing completion in dockyard hands.
You were standing by the ship?
Yes, I went up with a small crew of newcomers and stood by the Prince of Wales, working on her during the day, getting to know the transmitters and receivers and all communication equipment. We had a commissioned telegraphist by the name of Satchwell, a real nice old guy, we used to call him. And he was an enthusiast. Of course, all the Prince of Wales transmitters were all modern. We even had a dialing system on the benches that you could dial the frequency you wished to transmit on and the power that you wanted to use, which was really modern for the Navy. We carried out our first sea trials, and after approximately 3 months, we left for sea en route for Scapa Flow. On arrival at Scapa Flow, I seem to remember we did one practice shoot with our 14-inch guns at a towed target, and then we rejoined the King George V, the Hood. I seem to remember the Repulse was there, and of course there were numerous destroyers and cruisers, these Suffolk and Norfolk included. You'll forgive me if I don't remember the date, but we were dispatched with the Hood, Suffolk, Norfolk, and several destroyers to proceed northwards. And of course we were duly informed that the Bismarck, accompanied by the Eugen, the cruiser, were attempting to break out and reach the Atlantic to scupper our merchant fleets. The weather was bad, so bad in fact that the escorting destroyers gave it up after 2 days and left us. So we were then left with the nucleus of the Prince of Wales, the Hood, Norfolk, and the Suffolk. We were receiving reports of the position of the Bismarck and the Eugen, and due to bad visibility, they were lost. The history of how they were found has already been related. I couldn't do in any case. But eventually, we caught up with them. I will go straight to the action. I was in the plotting tower, and was well aware, as far as navigation is concerned, of what was happening. The Hood was ahead of us, and if memory is right, I was told at the time that we were 6 cables apart, and it was explained to me that that was less than a quarter of a mile. The Suffolk and the Norfolk flanked us. I did see the Bismarck, and at the time I saw her, we were only 17,000 yards apart. In fact, I did hear one wag say, "What the hell are we going to do, ram them?" We opened fire, and our point of aim was the Bismarck. The Hood engaged the Eugen. After several salvos, we registered a hit on the stern of the Bismarck. I understand it put her, one of her after turrets, out of action. I don't know the reason. We as mere Matlows queried it, but we received a signal from the Hood: shift object one right, which meant to say that air guns, which were already trained and had obtained a hit, were taken from the Bismarck, and we swiveled around to engage the Eugen. The Hood, I assume, shifted from the Eugen to the Bismarck. During that time, of course, we made no response. And it was during this time that I heard a voice from the bridge say, "The Hood's gone." And everybody in the plotting room were thunderstruck. The pride of the British Navy had gone, just like that. Captain Beach of the Prince of Wales, as far as we sailors were concerned, took the only course that he could take. We'd already received hits twice by the Bismarck, and I understand several from the Eugen. Her boat deck was cleared. The lower bridge was pretty well wiped out. Many casualties. And I heard many years later that a shell from the Bismarck penetrated one of the Prince of Wales magazines but failed to go off. Otherwise, I think...